encounter a world of obscurity, in a sense, as a flavor of unusualness because of the way that the teachings have unfolded. So we're going to talk a little bit today about why that is and how we can connect with that in a better way.
Okay, sounds very interesting. I leave you to it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So hello to everybody. Thanks again. And hopefully we can shed some more light on some of these wonderful mysteries. So last month we were speaking on the topic of imagination and how human beings are able to grasp wisdom and certain types of knowledge in a different way than what we've been conditioned. As we know, we placed a very big emphasis on the mind and knowing through mental activity or intellectualism. But we've spoken many times before that the acquisition of real knowledge is by a different path. So we're going to look at that today. Let's start by looking at life. We talk about life quite often because it's where we are. We discuss esotericism within the framework of life because this is the arena in which it unfolds. So if we ask ourselves, what do we think life is? What is our concept on life? Well, it can be many things according to the individual, very subjective type of answer, that life is something that stops when we die or when we lose consciousness or our body perishes or whatever. But life, from one point of view, is about human experience. Many times you say to someone, tell me about your life, and they say, you know, the common thing. Well, I was born here, I grew up here, I did this and this and this, and then they basically give you different points along the trajectory of time and space. But at the end of that, we think, okay, I know what you've done, but I don't know who you are. So we understand then that life is more than just events occurring one after the other in a linear fashion. Life is actually much more than that. That is one aspect to it. But the other side is that life is about our internal reality as well. So we can say that life is a combination of internal states and external events. So in this moment, we're all living our unique and particular external event. However, our internal state can be very, very different. You can be in a room with 50 people, and in that moment, you are living the same external event. However, there could be 50 different internal states in that moment, each person living their own life with that event. And obviously our internal state within that event is going to dictate how we live that external event. So to say that life is just external things happening is not enough, obviously. So the way in which we live is very much to do with our internal stance, can we say. And we've spoken of, and we will speak in the future, about our psychology and how that plays a big bearing on living life. So as we're living this external event and having internal states, there's a type of communication that's happening between us and the environment around us. And as we know, this communication that happens between our environment inside and externally is to do with the senses that we have. This is the way that we communicate with the third dimension. And we have our five senses, our eyes and our ears and so on and so on. And all of those things that we take in through our senses provide us with sensations. So the visual data that comes through my eyes and the auditory information that comes through my ears and my sense of touch and so on all create sensations within my psyche, within my psychology. These sensations begin to accumulate, and within the matter of a moment, these sensations collectively become a memory. So this morning, we had breakfast or we didn't have breakfast, to whatever we lived. And that small moment of our day was really just a bunch of sensations that we lived through the senses. And we now have a memory of our breakfast today. And that lives inside of our psychology, and this happens almost instantaneously. We live an event, and then that sensation goes in, and it's immediately a memory. So we have a lot of short-term memories happening, bam, 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 immediately, one after the other, like a chain reaction. And then they lie dormant, lying in there, and then slowly become long-term memories. Now, these memories collectively, because of the way that they get polarized within our psychology, which is a whole other deeper mystery, combine and slowly over time begin to shape and mold our perceptions. So our perceptions, the way that we perceive things, is based on our memory. The memory of how of the things that we've perceived about that thing before is. So it's very interesting that when we live a new experience, how fresh and how new that experience is, because we don't have preconceived ideas about it, because we don't have memories about it. It's very fresh and it's very new. That's why it's so easy for us to live an existence and for it to become very humdrum, because we think we've seen it all, we think we know it all. And now, bit by bit, we can understand how the Zen school talk about us having a beginner's mind. To experience the truth is to have a freshness and openness about life, to see things in a new way. But this is a divergent point. So our perceptions about how we see things, this is what it is, how we perceive life, this then leads to us developing concepts about things. And it can be from the minuscule to the grandiose. We can have a concept about a certain race. We can have a concept about the opposite sex. We can have a concept about one of our friends or someone that we've just newly met. It's very interesting, you know, they say first impressions last. First impressions last only because of the things that we've discussed here. Someone comes before us. Our senses are bombarded by all the impressions that this person is giving off. And we then are triggered with certain sensations about that person. And immediately, we develop a concept about that person without really even knowing them. I mean, these things happen so quickly that we're not really aware of it happening. But we do it with everything in our life. So these concepts that we have about reality, if we go back to the start of that chain where we looked at our life and how we engage with our life through our physical senses, that means that the concepts that we build can only be based on data from the physical world. And as we know, esotericism is not a partial teaching. It is integral. It is unitotal. We deal with that which lies behind the phenomena which we experience here. Because as traditions have taught, as doctrines have taught, that there is much more to this existence that we can't perceive with our physical senses. So what we need to open up to is the possibility of experiencing things which lie behind the physical world. And for that, we need different organs of perception, because our eyes are not enough to see that which lies outside of the third dimension. And our physical ears can't perceive that. We understand. I mean, there are animals that can hear far beyond the normal auditory range that we can have. And there are animals that can see far more tonalities of colour than what we can experience. So if things can be experienced to a greater capacity, even within the third dimension, then there is far more beyond that. So to try and grasped esoteric concepts with only using the physical senses would be an error. So where do these concepts lead us on to? These concepts lead us on to language. These concepts are pointed at or are explained by using words. All of the words that we use have been born from mental concepts. So let's say, for instance, we can take a hypothetical example of someone, and you see this in the movies sometimes, where someone, in a science fiction movie, someone comes into the future, and they're from, an ancient civilization, and they see cars and technology and guns and all of aeroplanes in the sky, and they have absolutely no idea that these things exist. They don't know what they're called. They don't know how to explain them because they've never had a concept before about them. They don't have any word for them. And you see them thinking, wow, this is a whole entire new reality, but they're not quite sure how to express what this new reality is because they don't have any concept about it. Everything that we explain comes from concepts that we have mentally. So the English language is very good for explaining material things. It's a very materialistic type of language when we look at it in relation to more spiritual types of language. Ancient Chinese, the Old Norse traditions of the runes, Old Biblical Hebrew, the Tibetan script, ancient Mayan, Sumerian. All of these languages are called spiritual languages because they were used to try and express spiritual concepts. And people can only express spiritual concepts because they've experienced them through spiritual means, through these other organs of perception that we're talking about. And the most esoteric organ of perception that we have is really the consciousness, which is a very big mystery in its own right. But as we've said time and time before, the activity of the human consciousness lies outside the orbit of the physical senses. So now we can understand a little bit more about the tradition of meditation, where we sit to disengage from the physical senses so we can learn what it is to experience with the consciousness itself. How am I to know my own psychology if I am to rely so heavily on the physical senses? It cannot be. I can't know my own thoughts and know the ins and outs of my own mind with the physical senses, so how do I do it? Well, as the esoteric teachings show, in Gnosticism we say that the consciousness is this organ of perception that we use to know. Therefore, the concepts and the experiences that the consciousness have lie outside, or can we say, extended beyond the third dimension. So therefore, the language that we use is many times inadequate to express the experiences and the concepts of the hidden worlds, of the hidden dimensions, of the internal realities that we have. So we've seen from all of the ancient traditions up until now, through all of the different lineages, a different way of expressing the concepts of the consciousness, the teachings of esotericism. It's enough to read certain Zen stories and certain biblical parables, or definitely reading some of the apocryphal gospels of the ancient Gnostics, to know that there's some very strange and unique stories and languages that are being used in there. Where if we pick it up and read it from a purely literal point of view, it makes absolutely no sense. But there's a common thread. You could put a passage from the ancient Gnostics without telling anybody where it was from, and it's very easy to think that it was from some of the Zen tradition. read through the Tao Te Ching and the poetry that exists within there. Very unusual. Very strange. But lying behind that language are vast truths. The language of the consciousness is very, very different because it gets one to engage with the imagination that we were talking about last month. Because when one engages with the imagination, they bypass mental activity. And as we've said before, Gnosis is not about mental activity, about reasoning, about logic. It's about a very different attitude and behavior, a very different way of perceiving the world. But first we have to access this consciousness. And when we do, we are able to translate this language of esotericism, and then truths will be revealed to us. And the strongest medium that we have that is able to best express these truths is through art. Because art, again, as we said, allows one to bypass the mind, to engage the imagination, and leaves room for the person to come to a type of comprehension about something. The language that we're talking about very much infers an archetypical language. The traditions of the myths are not to be taken literally, but are pointing at certain cosmic mysteries, trying to unveil them. When we have dreams, the language of dreams is to be interpreted through the archetypical language. Many of the things that happen to us in our dreams are very strange and obscure. If we take them literally, we can get into a little bit of mischief. The path of esotericism really is a path that we have to rely on the consciousness for. And then we see that all of this knowledge that we are being given to us in many of the ancient traditions through their architecture, through the sculptures, through their scriptures, through their poetry, their plays, their music, all point to universal truths. And then the boundaries of all of the traditions die away. And we see a synthetic truth that lies there. Synthetic truths because they're all pointing to the same thing. Just from a different direction, can we say. And when people study comparative religion, they see these synthetic truths. It doesn't take very much to dig through them. So the language of the consciousness, although it seems strange, is actually very wonderful, providing one with internal revelations. Listening to some of the beautiful Zen koans is enough to evidence this. The classic, if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it, does it make a sound? Well, the mind is flabbergasted with an answer like that, with a question like that. What is the sound of one hand clapping? All of these things, very mysterious ways of the Zen school teaching one about mysteries of the universe, but it doesn't make any sense. Nowadays, we don't live in a world like that. We live in a world of intellectual information, and knowing is the way to power. And we say the same thing about knowing with the consciousness. So, the first step in this is understanding that we have to learn to experience the world beyond the five senses that we have. And not only is the consciousness the only organ of perception that we have to experience the other realities, but we have the beautiful teachings of the chakras and the seven chakras of the human organism. For instance, when we're in a dream, we see things. We can bring back a visual memory, but we're not using our physical eyes when we see that. Excuse me. How is it that we're able to see these things? We can be in a dream and hear things, but we're not using our physical ears. Many things happen there. The way that we are experiencing this, which is another reality, is through these other extrasensory organs of perception, can we say. It's when we begin to have sensations outside of the third dimension that we start to have a different type of memory, a more spiritual type of memory rather than a materialistic type of memory. When our spiritual memory starts to build, we start to have a different type of perception, a perception that's not based in materialism. And then, through these perceptions, collectively, we develop spiritual concepts, understanding of spiritual things. So esotericism relies on the individual experience. It's not just the path of receiving the teaching. It's a path that is firmly established in experience, in experimenting to apply things. So we should very, from time to time, it's very much a good exercise to do, to look at our own concepts about the world. Concepts about sometimes spiritual things. Many times people come to the doorway of esoteric knowledge with many, many concepts already built up. And then they start to encounter these concepts from the school themselves, and they don't necessarily match that which we've known. Not knowing that all of the teachings that are given to us within esotericism have come from those who experienced things outside of the third dimensional reality. They have perceived them through direct experience. They have direct knowledge of these things. Spiritual perception, spiritual concepts, and a different way of communicating these things. So the spiritual language, which comes from spiritual concepts, which comes from spiritual perception, which has been had through spiritual means, is difficult to understand with a third dimensional way of thinking, with third dimensional language. And it's said very often that an awakened one speaks more within their silence. Reading through the beautiful autobiographies of the masters that this planet has seen, and we see that their life itself became a teaching. They used their life to teach other people. It wasn't necessarily them standing in front of people talking in a lecture or talking like we are now, but it was more in their actions. That is how they taught others. But only those who were awake enough to be able to perceive what was going on were able to receive the revelations in that moment, because they were attuned to that language. They were ready to accept those things. Many, many interesting things. The beautiful classic Zen story of the student who wanted to experience the void. And he asked his teacher time and time again, "Master, Master, please teach me about this beautiful illuminating void." "No, go away." Next day, "Master, please teach me about the void. I want to know. I want to experience the void. Tell me about the void." "No, go away." The next day again, give credit to the disciple. He was very persistent. Again and again and again. "No, no, no." And then one day, as the story goes, the master was observing the disciple at work. And through his power of perception, his faculty of seeing, he determined that that disciple was ready to not be told, but to experience the void. And as the Zen story goes, the master walked up to the student and kicked him square in the gut. The disciple buckles over on all fours, staring at the ground, holding his stomach. The master stands above him, and all the disciples are watching, not knowing how the disciple will react. And the disciple puts his head up. He stares into the eyes of the master, and he says, "Thank you." and in that moment he had that experience. It makes no sense to our way of thinking. It takes a different type of understanding of the human experience to pick up on the knowledge behind these stories. But I think we've run out of time.
Thank you, Cameron. We are, yes, almost out of time, ending with a very excellent and inspiring story.
Yeah, thank you, Diana.
Yes, this concept, you could say, of silence, the power in silence that is often closer to the truth, to that absolute truth, is something that we can all really reflect on in our lives. It's, you know, living in a day and age where you always need to be talking or always need to have background noise, always need to be, you know, sound. So to encourage that silence and to understand the language of the consciousness is something that is very helpful. So thank you again for coming on the program.
My pleasure. It's a privilege. Thank you.
And next week we have another guest, Alexandra Flores. She will be talking to us. Pretty sure she'll be doing a movie review on Pinocchio, but it may be another topic. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the program, and hope you have a good afternoon. And we hope you join us next week. May peace be with you.